And they run through our ass like shit through a tin horn, man, and we could not stop them.
It's ridiculous that they do. That was a huge colony. Well, we didn't miss it. You know, the typical rah, 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 zip, boom, bah, boo.
You don't cuss. You don't drink. So what are your vices?
I have been known to chew a bit of tobacco when I get a little tired or watching film.
Hey, I'm Coach O. I just love my Hummer. I have my Hummer. You need a Hummer? Tell them about it, JoJo.
They've won the biggest championship, and that's the championship of life.
Gas control. Everybody just do your job. You understand that?
Welcome in to the latest episode of That SEC Podcast. I'm your host, Michael Bratton. I go by SEC Mike on Twitter. And I'm joined, as always, by my cousin Shane, who goes by Big Orange Vowels on Twitter. What are you up to, you big Tennessee homer?
Hey, buddy. Lost another 100.
Man, what a game, though, we had there. Unless you're an Alabama, diehard Alabama fan, I guess it wasn't that exciting for you. But, hey, we kind of nailed it, Shane. We both picked Alabama. We both said that was a terrible pick, and to go against us, and it turned out we were right.
That's right. Just listen, guys. We're trying to help you make money here. So if you would have faded the pick, you'd definitely be making some money. Even the over-under, Mike. I think they hit the over there in the second quarter.
No, that is not true, Shane. While I was touting the under as my favorite, you know, after all that scoring, Shane, it only went over by two. So, yes, I was wrong, but only by two. But, man, so many storylines from that game, Shane. I think if I'm an Alabama fan, certainly not, I don't know if I'm hitting the panic button here, but just never seen Alabama get dominated in this fashion, lost by 28 points. That doubles the greatest loss that Nick Saban has ever experienced as Alabama's head coach. He's never lost by more than 14, so that record's gone. Mm-hmm. Tua looks shaky. This is, two marquee games in a row, if you want to go back to that Georgia, you know, where they get tested. Yeah. Two games in a row where Alabama's tested, and Tua just, I don't know. I mean, his stats look good, but he, to the eye, did not look like the better quarterback in this game, did you think?
No, by no means. And, you know, I don't know. I was just watching this game, and it just felt like maybe this, plug-and-play coordinator thing finally caught up to them, because it just seemed like they didn't have an answer on offense or defense, and which is surprising as much as Saban, you know, is involved with that defense. That was the worst Alabama defensive performance I've seen in a long time. And I know Tua is in the spotlight, but, I mean, it doesn't matter if Tua's having a hell of a game. If they're putting up 40 points, it doesn't matter, man.
Well, the tone was set immediately from Alabama's first play. Tua throws the pick six. Mm-hmm. You got to credit Clemson for scheming that coverage up. Tua totally confused, and this is a guy that is noted for never being confused. Hell, Shane, I don't know if you caught this during the season, but there was an article written. Apparently, one of these SEC coaches had reached out to an NFL guy for a defensive coverage that they've never even ran in the NFL. They ran it on Tua, and he recognized it immediately. So the fact that he was getting fooled out here by Clemson, it's just a hell of a job by Brent Venables. He's one of the highest-paid coordinators in the nation for a reason. But the other side of the ball, like you said, without Jeremy Pruitt on staff there, without Kirby Smart on staff there, I mean, Alabama was just – they were – helpless on defense, it seemed like. They had no answers. They didn't adjust. Mm-mm. And it almost seemed like they just rolled the defensive lineman out there and just said, you know, go take care of business, boys. And I got to credit Clemson's offensive line, because they came through big time.
Oh, God, yeah, man. It was a dominant game. I mean, start to finish. I thought there for a second there at the beginning that Alabama's like, okay, they're going to get this thing going. But Bama couldn't get off the field on defense. And on offense, it just – I don't know. Did this felt like they were just saying, okay, like kind of like what you said, we're just going to air it out and see what happens, because it's worked in the past. And there, it just mm-hmm. felt like there was no script to this game.
Aside from the first, you know, it was the second Alabama touchdown and the last one of the day, Shane, when they were, you know, they were on the 1 yard line. They did a little rollout. It was a nice play call there from Loxley. Clemson did not see it coming. But after that, all his goal line and short yardage plays, I mean, they were just stupid. Yeah. I mean, it was just nonsensical, a lot of the stuff. And I think it was capped by, you know, last ditch attempt there to a, they call it a damn Tua rollout.
Yeah.
I mean, it was just one terrible play after another. He's getting, you know, he got too damn cute is what he did on the goal line, and it bit him in the ass.
Absolutely. And that beautiful fake field goal, Mike, you know, I thought that had some real potential there.
I mean, especially when you got Jalen Hurts on the sideline. Mm-hmm. You run a quarterback who's, you know, obviously never out there. He's not known as an athlete. And you got the damn kicker as a lead blocker. I mean, how fucking stupid was that? I think that was worse than Kirby Smart's call. I know Kirby Smart's came at a worse time and probably cost Georgia a shot at the national championship, but calling for a fake field goal run, and I think it was like 4th and 7. So it was not like they needed a yard. They needed several mm-hmm. yards. With the damn kicker as your blocker, that just reeked of desperation. And it was even worse because damn Clemson was in, you know, prevent. They knew they knew something was coming. But surely, I almost thought there was like some kind of trick design where maybe that when they were running it, like it was his shoe or something. It wasn't a football. I was like, surely they're not running this. But they did, and that just epitomized the night there. Saban just grasping for straws.
That was me, man. I was like, no, you can't be doing this. What are you doing?
All right, Shane, Alabama, and Clemson was only up at halftime by 15, 31-16. Mm-hmm. But even that, Shane, it just seemed insurmountable. I didn't think Alabama would get shut out the entire second half. But I thought Clemson could have just picked their damn score. I had no idea Trevor Lawrence was this good. This guy was on the damn money. Check out this stat, Shane. 60% of Clemson's yards came from Trevor Lawrence passes on third and long, which is 5 yards or more. So 60% of their yards came on third and long. That's just incredible. That's supposed to be the damn money down where Nick Saban's defenses make their mark, but mm-hmm. they just could not stop this guy.
No, they couldn't, man. I mean, he was automatic. And I'll tell you what, as a Vol fan, it was tough watching that offense because you had Trevor Lawrence, T. Higgins, Amari Rodgers, all that were going to commit to the University of Tennessee, and boy, did they look good. And not to mention that Justin Ross, oh my God, what an athlete he is.
Yeah, and I made the remark, and I was kind of half kidding, but half not. You know, he was a top prospect, I believe, there out of the state of Alabama last recruiting cycle. What are your thoughts on this, Shane? I said, Alabama's dynasty died the day he left the state to go because he chose Clemson over Alabama. And, you know, I'm kind of half joking there, but I don't know if I am because, I mean, if this guy's just a true freshman and obviously Lawrence is as well.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. Alabama's got no one to stop this guy.
That's true, man. Because that's the thing about Clemson. It's not just how great they were. It's how young they are. I mean, everybody talks about Bama's age. But Clemson's just as young, if not younger, in key spots. So, I don't know, man. Is the dynasty over? I mean, has Clemson, do they have the reins here?
Well, I mean, Alabama's still going to be damn good next year. But like we had hit on in the past, you know, we thought these coordinators would come back to haunt Alabama sooner. They didn't until now. But I don't know. They just don't have – I've heard a lot of good things about Pete Golding, the co-defensive coordinator, but maybe it's time to let him take over because whatever Tosh Lapoy was doing was not working.
Mm-hmm.
Loxley's obviously gone. You're hearing the offensive line coach may leave. I mean, this is kind of upheaval here on Alabama staff year after year after year, and it's finally catching up to him. And I don't know. I mean, I don't want to read too much into it, Shane, but if you saw the press conference after the game, I mean, you got old Giddy Dabo who's just having the time of his life.
Yeah.
And then when they have Saban in there, I mean, he just looked like, I don't know, he just looked like he was just ready for bed. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like he was just out of it, and he just looked, that was the first time in a long time I saw Saban, and he looked his age.
That's the truth, man. If you watch some of those clips, man, his hair's everywhere. He just, I mean, like you said, he felt like he just took his meds. And he's ready for bed because he was ready to get – he was even at the end. Did you see where he was talking to the media and pretty much just like thanking him, and I don't know. It just it didn't even sound like Nick. So I don't know, man. I don't know. I am curious. You know, there's a lot of NFL talk, but like you said, how many more of these top stressed games is he going to be able to handle? I mean, the age is there.
And what, you know, obviously, Alabama fans, this is a tough one. They've had so many damn ups, so I don't think they can really be, you know, too mad. No. Or certainly not mad at their team, or maybe mad at, again, I don't think you'd be mad at Saban, maybe mad at some of the coaches there. But after the game, it's pretty heartbreaking, Shane. Damian Harris kind of breaking down, kind of realizing, you know, this is the last time I'm going to put on this uniform, and just such a disappointing performance for not only himself, but the entire team. I think Alabama definitely went away from the running game, but hell, that's going to happen when you get beat down like that. But
yeah,
I wanted to play these comments from Damian Harris just because, you know, you got to put it in perspective for what these guys are going through.
You know, it's been a fun ride. You know, even though it didn't end the way we wanted it to, and you know, we would have liked to end the year better. You know, seniors, we would have liked to go out on a better note. But it's been a tremendous opportunity to be a part of this program for 4 years. You know, we're one of the winningest classes in college football history. 2-time national champions, 3-time SEC champions. I mean, we've accomplished a lot of things as a team. So, you know, it hurts not to win this game, but, you know, we still got a lot to be proud of ourselves for. And, you know, it sucks that it's over.
Can you put in words how grateful you are for your time over the last 4 years in Tuscaloosa, these coaches, your teammates, just everything all together?
Yeah. I mean, it's been the best experience of my life. You know, I just hate that, you know, knowing that this is my last opportunity to play with this team. You know, it sucks losing, but the biggest thing for me is I know that I won't be able to step on the field with this team again.
All right, Shane. So, I mean, I think that really puts it in to perspective. You know, Damian Harris, one of the leaders of this team, came back to school for his senior season to get one more national title. You know, and just walk away with a perfect ending. And, of course, that obviously didn't happen. But tough to see this from these guys after the game. And this
Yeah, I mean, you're talking seniors, Mike. I mean, another national championship. So, I mean, how many do you have? I'm not feeling bad. He's got a ring here at the house, you know. So, Damian came back. What I'm upset about the Damian Harris situation is, honestly, at the beginning of the season, I thought he'd be a Heisman frontrunner. I thought they would, you know, with Tua, they wouldn't be able to load the box. They'd get some more rushing going, and they have. But it's a committee, and right. It kind of sucks that Damian came back, and he's splitting the ball with Josh and Najee, you know. So it just I don't know. I think that's probably why he's a little bit more disappointed, but – now I don't feel bad for them. They're 14-1. They win all the time, and just because they have one defeat, you know, that's not the saddest story out there. The sad story is, you know, maybe some of those seniors on that team that didn't get to play, you know, and never not go into the NFL. I mean, it's sad for me because college football's over. You know, that's the sad story, Mike.
A cold-hearted Shane here. Tennessee roots are coming through.
No, I don't know. I don't know, man. It's hard because when you have somebody like that that's been dominant for a decade, you know, when you see them get beat,
I think the best way to explain it, Shane, Alabama got Alabama'd, if that makes sense.
They really did. You know? They got steamrolled, man. And we're not used to seeing it. I was watching this game, and I'm like, I mean, it was hard to comprehend. I didn't know what joke I wanted to put on Twitter next, you know? And I saw some good ones, man. I saw probably my favorite one was when they said at half, they said because you're looking there at the Tigers and you've got Trevor Lawrence, like I said, T. Higgins and Amari Rodgers supposed to go to Tennessee, but who messed that up? Butch Jones. So Saban should have turned around and fired him at half, you know, because Clemson shouldn't have those players on their team. So that was one of my favorites that I saw last night.
Well, Shane, on the opposite end of the spectrum here, someone that I thought you could probably hang out with here on Monday night after the title game, Charles Barkley, live on TNT. I guess he was either watching the game or caught the final end of it, and he had a pretty interesting reaction. So we want to play old Barkley's clip from Inside the NBA.
Roll Tide! Clemson, thank you. Oh, thank you, Clemson.
Spoken like a true Auburn War Eagle.
War damn Eagle, thank you, Clemson.
What place is y'all coming?
Oh, the old Auburn grad was having a good time Monday night, wasn't he, Shane?
Oh, dude, he was so happy, man. Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. Alabama's crushed so many people in this league for so long, it's hard to feel bad for him, you know? Mm-hmm. That's like somebody said, you're rooting for Alabama because in their SEC is like pulling for the devil because he's in the Bible, you know? you kind of want to just because it's a dominant conference, and you know I love SEC football, but you know then again, I mean this is a dynasty that's we're going to be talking about for years, Mike, and it's not over. Just because they messed up this year doesn't mean they ain't going to be in the same dance next year. You know what I'm saying?
No, yeah, I got you. I think they'll be right there, but everyone's going to kick Alabama while they're down, and that includes Ole Miss receiver A.J. Brown, Shane. He tweeted this out during the beatdown. Nick Saban about to snatch up all the keys to them Challengers and Camaros back at the facility. Oh, that was a good one.
That was a good one. Yeah, there was some doozies, man. There was some doozies.
Oh, and last thing I got on this game, Shane, speaking of kicking him while he's down, Jason Witten, you know, for some damn reason, they got the Monday Night Football crew. They eliminated the coach's film room, which is my favorite part of these playoff games. I spoke on that on this podcast. Mm-hmm. They replaced the coach's film room with the Monday Night crew, and it took until the opening kickoff for old Jason Witten to screw up. He's screaming, why are they calling fair catch? Why are they calling fair catch? It's because his dumb ass didn't know that's a new rule where you get it at the 25. So, oh, my God, it literally took one play for that to screw up. But,
well, Mike,
I don't know. I was not a fan of it.
I don't know. It's hard for me to keep up with the rules, you know, and I love college football, but sometimes they do some stuff and I'm like, wait, why did that happen? You know what I'm saying? So, I mean, and they're going to come out with five new rules next year and I'm going to be lost again. So I feel you, Jason. I feel you, buddy.
Well, let's stay on that Tennessee theme. Big news out of Knoxville on Tuesday.
Yeah, real big, Mike. Real big, baby.
Tennessee finally getting an offensive coordinator. Shane, this is expected to be officially announced on Wednesday, but it's being reported by everyone and everywhere. Jim Chaney, the offensive coordinator there, Georgia's coming to Tennessee. He's coming back to Tennessee. So Jeremy Pruitt hurting one of his key rivals in the state that he recruits the most, snatching up Georgia's offensive coordinator. Shane, what are your thoughts on Jim Chaney making a return to Knoxville?
Oh, Mike, you know, I went round and round on this one, but I'm all for it. I'm ready for a big man to get back up here at Tennessee. That's a big get. I think that's a big get for Pruitt to get him to come up here as his OC. Now, I've heard mixed emotions from a lot of Georgia fans that are kind of happy that he's going, but, mm-hmm. One thing about it, it's kind of late in the game. So, you know, the fact that Chaney's coming up here, it does leave a spot open. A lot of people talking about, you know, from hiring within. Is that what you think's going to happen?
Yeah, it looks like they're going to make an offer to their co-OC, James Coley, mm-hmm. who he's the one that got the quarterback duties this year. They kind of knocked Chaney down to tight end duties just for that, just to keep him because Jimbo Fisher tried to hire Coley last offseason. So Kirby kind of had to, give this guy a promotion just to keep him on staff. And
okay.
So that I think that's the move that Kirby's going to make. But
what about?
Let me tell you, Shane, Georgia fans are always pissed off at their offensive coordinator. It doesn't matter who it is. They wanted to run Mike Bobo off.
Yeah.
As soon as they ran him off, when they had the statistically the best quarterback in SEC history under Mike Bobo, and then Mark Richt fired like a year later because they didn't have Bobo anymore to call the plays. So I don't know. Georgia's just got a weird reputation for offensive coordinators. I think if you look at the progression of Jake Fromm, I don't see how you can really fault Jim Chaney for any of that.
Yeah.
He's the first – I think Georgia was the first team ever in the SEC to have back-to-back 1,000-yard rushers with four different guys.
Mm-hmm.
So that just happened. The progression of the offensive line, while, you know, that's certainly Sam Pittman bringing in the guys and his coaching. I mean, it's still Jim Chaney is there doing the play calling. So, yeah, I don't know. I think it is a big loss for Georgia. It's a big gain for Tennessee. Like I said, I'm not trying to oversell it because I did, and I still think this. I think Matt Canada would have potentially been a better hire for Tennessee, but certainly not going to knock Jim Chaney. I mean, and just the fact that you're hurting a division rival by getting him,
yeah,
I think it just makes it that much bigger.
Now, let me ask you, talking about Pittman, Chaney and Pittman have been kind of like a package deal the last, I guess, three stops, something like that. I mean, they've been going around. I mean, is there any chance, because I know Coach loves Coach Friend, but is there something maybe that he could dial up, maybe a co-OC or something like that, you know, just find a spot for him up here? Can we get him, Mike?
The offense, so you're wanting Sam Pittman back in Knoxville,
absolutely,
huh?
Absolutely, absolutely. I mean,
well, I'll tell you, Shane, that is not going to happen. But I'll tell you what could happen. I may have just set you up for even bigger disappointment. Alabama's offensive line coach is expected to leave for Georgia Tech, and you better believe Nick Saban is going to be picking up that phone and calling Sam Pittman. So there's a chance, I've heard this. He could be the target there, the main target for Alabama. So Sam Pittman's going to have his choice of a lot of jobs. Let's just say he's getting a pay raise within the next week. I can guarantee you that.
Oh, Mike.
Speaking of pay raises, Shane, how about this?
I'll tell you right now, Saban's picking up the phone for Life Alert next. I mean, did you see him? I mean, he looked like he was the walking dead, brother.
Well, he just got his ass stomped like never before. I mean, I think that's why it was so bizarre. But speaking of pay raises, Shane, check this out. This comes courtesy of our buddy Tony Basilio.
Mm-hmm.
Check out this deal Jim Chaney is reportedly going to get. And this is coming through Basilio sources here. $1.5 million next season.
Mm.
$1.7 million his third year. So I'm assuming $1.6 is his middle year there. But that is a hell of a sum there to throw at an offensive coordinator. But that's going to be more than they paid Helton last year. But yeah, you know, you got to make these big moves if you're going to bring big time targets in.
Well, I've already alerted Calhoun's restaurant that he's en route, so the package is going to get better, I'm sure. Pay him, man. I mean, that's our offense was absolute garbage last year. So yeah, I don't care what you give him. I mean, long as we're winning. I mean, if he comes up here and nothing changes, well, then, you know, I'd like to maybe take a deeper dive into that contract. But for now, we just want to see some productivity on that offense.
All right, Chad, one other news. I thought this was kind of interesting here for Tennessee. Their big signee, Kavaris Crouch, that's the guy that signed with the Vols on the final day of the early signing period. Mm-hmm. He told Steve Wilfong of 24/7 Sports one of the things that got him to kind of bond with Jeremy Pruitt, kind of sealed the deal for the Vols. Oh, Jeremy Pruitt's playing Madden online with these recruits. What do you think? What do you make of that?
I love it, man. I didn't see that one coming. Did you? I never saw that coming.
No, and you know, that was one of the bonuses, Shane, of missing out on a bowl game. Jeremy Pruitt's had some extra time to learn how to play Madden.
You know it ain't him, don't you, Mike?
Well, that was what I was going to lead you up
to.
Yeah,
he's got that headset on. His kid's playing it.
That's what he was at. You know, he said he bonded over the, you know, playing the game and the headset. But I was going to ask you, it had to have been one of the GAs. Yeah. That would be my best guess with Pruitt on the headset. But however he's working it, Shane, it's working for him. So I don't know. It's kind of a big dick move there.
I like it.
Again, elite recruits by playing Madden, something Nick Saban never do, and then you're stealing one of your rivals' offensive coordinators. I mean, everything's working right now for Jeremy Pruitt, and I don't know. It's definitely an exciting time for Tennessee fans.
I'll tell you what, man. I've watched a lot of football over the years, especially Tennessee, and you see one or two players usually step up every year, or maybe more of a vocal part of that team. And it seems like Tennessee's landed a few of these alpha type dogs. You know, I like Crouch. I like Morris. I mean, if you ever see Morris, he's never met a camera he didn't like. You know what I'm saying? And then you also got that JUCO kid. You see him? He's every time he's near a camera, he's got something to say. So it just seems like we're gonna have a lot of fiery players, young but fiery players on the team next year. So I'm looking forward to it, man.
Well, Shane, they're all fiery till they get to campus and they get their ass stomped by a SEC guy.
Oh, no. Don't ruin it.
I don't buy too much into any of that. All right, we had a ton of announcements, Shane, so I wanted to run through a couple of these.
Okay.
Auburn, great news, Shane, coming off the news that Derrick Brown, you know, their star defensive lineman is returning. Marlon Davidson, another one of their star linemen, also returning for his senior year. Their left tackle, Prince Wanagu, he's coming back, and Javari Davis, defensive back. So, I don't know, things are loading up here for Auburn, Shane. And one thing that I thought was particularly interesting, I think this, you know, obviously this guy was kind of joking, but it is an interesting parallel. Their star receiver, the burner, Anthony Schwartz, remember that guy him, Shane?
Yeah.
He tore Tennessee on a couple plays there, but he tweeted out something about, Auburn's landing elite freshman quarterback, the top receiver from the state of Alabama. And he was like, who does that remind you of? He tweeted that out during the Clemson game. So he's making the parallel of Auburn and Clemson there.
Oh, wow.
Things are starting to trend after such a horrible time there for Auburn. Things are starting to trend in the right direction here for Gus Malzahn's program.
Yeah, man. And getting some of these players to come back, I mean, that's huge, especially on defense. And, I mean, because a lot of those boys have been playing together for a while. So I'm looking forward to it, man. I like you said, the way Auburn started the season and end the season is night and day. And it just feels like they're starting to get things going. Of course, that's kind of the Gus mentality, you know. Suck one year, be great the next. So maybe the next year is it, man.
Yeah, and I think I really do with Davidson and Brown and guys like Nick Coe and Big Cat Bryant.
Mm-hmm.
All these guys there for Auburn, I think the Tigers are going to have the best defensive line heading into next season in the SEC. And in a line of scrimmage league, I think that's crucial. That's huge for Auburn.
Absolutely.
So they're not the only one. Shane, South Carolina receiver Brian Edwards, he's announced he came back. He used the popular Wolf of Wall Street Leonardo DiCaprio scene, you know, where he starts screaming about he's coming back. That's a classic, so that's how he announced it. LSU linebacker Michael Divinity, he had a real breakout year this year. He was one of their standouts next to Devin White. He announced he's coming back, and he noted he's coming back to win a national championship, Shane. So LSU, they look like they're getting some top 10 love. That was a big one for LSU. I like to see these guys returning when that's an option to them.
Mm-hmm.
While on the other end of the spectrum, Shane, some bad news here for Ole Miss. Jerrion Ealy, the guy we've touched on the last couple episodes where he broke the Under Armour All-American Game rushing record,
yeah.
He is decommitted from Ole Miss. He was their highest-ranked commit. Sounds like he's going to Clemson, so kind of more bad news for the Rebels, but we've also noted he's a top Major League Baseball prospect, so there's a good chance he may never play college football. He may just go for the Major League Baseball money, but that's a loss.
Yeah, that's big. Do you think it was just that one game? I mean, just I don't know. That just seemed like overnight, all of a sudden, he's the guy everybody wants just because he broke the record.
Well, I think that All-Star game played an impact there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you want to see what they do against other elite competition.
Yeah.
And now this guy's tweeting out nothing but Clemson national championship. And I believe he's taking an official visit to Clemson this weekend. So he's probably going to be there for the damn, you know, trophy parade and all that. So
I tell you, sorry to interrupt, but I did see him do an interview during one of the practices. And I tell you what, man, the kid really does love some baseball. So, like you said, don't be surprised if he doesn't show up to any of these schools.
And then another note here, Arkansas, final update around the league I have, Shane, Ryan Pooley, you know, interesting decision, a junior. He's announced he's going to go to the NFL. He's not a top prospect by any means, but, you know, like I said, we don't know their situations or, you know, obviously this is not the coaching staff that recruited him, so we don't know his relationship with the coaching staff or personal life. So definitely not judging him. Just it was a surprise to me to see him declare for the NFL.
Yeah.
Sticking with Arkansas, Shane, because I had a little story here I wanted to share, but first let's go to this audio clip. This is Darren McFadden. Obviously, everyone knows Derek McFadden. He was recently named to the College Football Hall of Fame. He's going to be one of their new inductees. He was on Sports Talk with Bo Mattingly the other day, and he was asked about if he should have won the Heisman, if Darren McFadden believes he should have won it. I just thought these were some interesting comments, and then we can discuss it.
Do you think you should have won a Heisman Trophy?
Of course, so yeah. I definitely believe so, for sure. This is how I tell people. My sophomore year, I can understand because I guess I came onto the scene late and, you know, they didn't want to give it to any sophomores at the time. And so when my junior year came around, it's nothing to take anything from what Tebow did because he had a heck of a year and did a great job, and he definitely deserved it, but I felt like I should have won a Heisman that year also.
All right, Chase, so there you go, Darren McFadden. Should have won the Heisman. He was the runner-up twice, Shane, which is pretty remarkable. But, I mean, this guy in 3 years, almost 4,600 rushing yards, 4,590 total, 41 touchdowns rushing. I mean, this guy was a beast of all beasts when he was in his college days. You know, it's an accomplishment just to be a Heisman finalist once. But he was a Heisman runner-up twice. Do you think any chance he should have won the Heisman either one of his years?
So the 1 year, it was Tebow, right?
Yeah, and I think it was the – when you think about it, Shane, I think it was the year Tebow won it, his team lost, like, I want to say 3 or 4 games.
Oh, okay. All right. And I mean, this is so long ago. I wasn't prepared for this one. But Darren McFadden – was, I guess, is this around like when they were, I mean, they were at one point doing 10, 11 game wins. Was this kind of when they were around that era?
Yeah. And so, I mean, Tebow was awesome. I'm not trying to downplay him. I think he scored like 55 touchdowns. He was insane. He was basically the entire team that first year. And then that led into the following year where they lost one game, won the national championship. And then the following year they went undefeated. So
he lost to Tebow twice.
No, he lost to Tebow once, and then the first year, I believe it was Troy Smith. Remember the old Ohio State quarterback? And I think that's the one where he really should have won it, because that was a game where Troy Smith went into the BCS back then, and that's when they lost to Florida in the first BCS title game.
I got you.
And he was basically like a non-factor. And this is, you're talking about the damn Heisman Trophy winner. He couldn't do anything against the Gators. So
yeah.
I think he's got a good point. But why I really wanted to bring this up, Shane, this was back when I was at school in 2007 at Tennessee.
Mm-hmm.
Darren McFadden in Arkansas came to Neyland Stadium.
Yeah.
And I just remember going in this game thinking, okay, the one guy Tennessee's got to stop is Darren McFadden. And I just remember leaving the game. I was like, man, they really stuffed that guy. He didn't have anything going.
Yeah.
I got home. I looked at the box score, Shane. He had 22 carries for 117 yards. And I just realized, like, what a great player he is, where I legitimately thought, because he was so good, I thought they had like completely shut him down.
Yeah.
But he got 117 yards. And I don't know. That just spoke to me of when you limit a big-time guy and he's still breaking the century mark, it just kind of told me what a special player he was. Now, keep in mind, he went for 321 the week prior. 2 weeks later against LSU, he had a 206 and 3 touchdowns. I mean, this guy was just a monster. And I always took that away from that game, was just, while he was incredibly impressive, the entire defense of Tennessee basically had to swarm him on every play, and he still got 117. That just has always stuck with me.
Oh yeah, no, he was a great college football player. He was going to be great in the NFL, and he just couldn't stay healthy, man. He burnt me a couple years in fantasy football, so it's hard to look at DMC the same way. But there was a couple years, you know, he shined in the NFL, but it's just a shame that he could not stay healthy, because he could have been a great player at the next level. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. All right, Shane, final thing I got on this one. Wanted to keep this one relatively short with you on the road and everything, but I just thought this was interesting. Debut national championship odds via online sportsbook BetOnline. Clemson opens as the favorite. No surprise there, but, you know, you're used to seeing Alabama there, but Clemson's 2-1 odds to win it. Alabama's second best at 5-2, so right behind Clemson. But then you have a dramatic step back. Georgia, third best odds in the nation. They're at 12-1. You got Florida at basically double that at 25-1. Auburn, 50-1. LSU, Mississippi State, both also at 50-1. And then finally, Texas A&M, 80-1. Does anything stand out to you about those odds?
Mississippi State being that high, I wouldn't touch that with a 10-foot pole. Of course, they'll probably win it all. You know, it's way too early. No real surprise. You know, I don't know.
Maybe I really like A&M at 80-1. I think there's great value there. People are going to look at that, and people are already looking ahead to schedules. I really cannot stress enough how looking ahead to schedules is a mistake.
Yeah.
Because we don't even know what coaches are going to be there. We don't know what players are going to be there. And people always want to circle away games as some kind of detriment that is unsurmountable. But that is not the case either. I mean, Tennessee went to Auburn last year and won. I mean, it can happen. It's not that far-fetched for teams to go on the road and win. So not saying Texas A&M is going to win the national championship, but like you say, Mississippi State 50-1, Texas A&M 80-1. I significantly like A&M at 80-1 more than I like Mississippi State at 50-1. So a lot of times what you got to look for is value in these. And I really think in year two under Jimbo Fisher, Kellen Mond is going to be that much better. They got a ton of their offensive line coming back. They got all their receivers coming back. Yes, they lose Travion and Jace Sternberger, the outstanding tight end and running backs. But, I mean, running backs, I'm not trying to discredit them, but I think they can be easily replaced. They signed the number one tight end prospect in the nation. They're losing some tacklers on defense. But Mike Elko, I mean, he's a hell of a defensive coordinator. I don't know. I'm just buying the A&M stock, and I look for them to win, you know, 10 games next year. And if they're doing that, if they somehow find a way to beat either Alabama or Clemson, they're going to put themselves in conversation for the college football playoff, I think.
Well, you know, Mike, I tell you, when I'm looking at odds like these, I just – I mean, if you're taking a long shot, it's tough for me to take somebody from the West. I feel like they're going to beat each other. It feels like if there was going to be a team, it's going to be out of the East. So I'm looking at Georgia or even Florida right now. If I'm going to, you know, just take a long shot, I'm going to take it on one of those guys. I do like Florida's schedule next year. I think, you know, some of their games, you know, they got Tennessee at home. They got, you know, Georgia's at neutral site game. They got Missouri away is probably one of their toughest games. So I don't know. That's just kind of what I'm looking at right now is just if I'm taking a long shot, it's going to be somebody out of the East. Now, I definitely think a team out of the West has a better shot to making it to a national championship game. But we're just talking long odds here.
And I did see – I don't even know what outlet this was. I don't think it was very reputable, but I just want to get your thoughts on this, Shane. Because they listed Tennessee at 120-1.
Yeah, buddy.
Are you touching those up?
Well, now that Chaney's in play, absolutely. I always put a little bit on it, you know, because you never know. One of these years, it may hit.
Well, good luck with that one,
Shane. Yeah, I've lost a lot of money over the last – I think I've done this – I've probably been gambling for, good 7-8 years now, so – Yeah, I've just been giving money away, Mike. Just been giving it away.
All right, Shane, that's all I got on this one. You got anything before we hop off here?
No, man. I hate it. Disney's a money pit, Mike. I'm going to tell you that. If you think about coming down here, you better get another part-time job. You can't eat for less than 60 bucks down here. I'm going to start working.
All right, Shane, that'll do it for this one. Thanks for joining me. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in, and we'll catch you on the next one.
See you, buddy. See you, guys. Go Vols.